I'm Rebecca Lavoie, and this is You Can't Make This Up. You Can't Make This Up is the podcast where we uncover the true stories behind your favorite Netflix documentaries and films. On today's episode, we take a closer look at the Netflix documentary, Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut.
We feel a lot of shame about our gut, but it influences so much about our health, about how we feel, if we are overweight or not, what kind of diseases we can get, how our immune system is being trained, and really with that, the course of our lives.
Today, we're talking to director Anjali Nair. They say you should trust your gut. The same holds true for your health, as emerging research shows the digestive system plays a larger role in our well-being than ever thought before. In addition to helping with digestion and nutrition, scientists are learning that microbiomes in the gut may be connected to illnesses, and what we eat may be helpful in fighting these conditions. The Netflix documentary Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut, demystifies the role our gut plays in our overall health. The film takes us inside our bodies to show us what goes in and what comes out can benefit our physical and emotional fitness. It features researchers and patients at the forefront of a new understanding of medicine and offers practical advice to improve your gut and unlock the rewards.
It is kind of spectacular what food can do to you and how what you eat really does change your body.
And I'm joined by director Anjali Nair. Anjali, welcome to You Can't Make This Up.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So I don't remember my AP biology teacher in 1990 using the term gut. Can you tell me what part of the actual body are we talking about when we say the word gut?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially the thing that runs through our body all the way from like when you're swallowing food and like first starting to when it leaves your body. Interestingly, the gut is pretty much one of the first things that we evolved. So it predates your brain. It predates a whole bunch of other functions in your body. And it's essentially how you process nutrients and food and let out the waste.
Now, I know you have a background in science before you came into filmmaking. How did you get into gut science from what it is that you studied before you became a filmmaker?
Yeah, I would qualify myself as a nerd through and through. So I'm just curious in general. I first came across the idea of the microbiome because my mom is a doctor and often talked about the kind of what happens later in life when people are or aren't breastfed. And so it came up about like what the importance of breastfeeding is, all the different processes of how our gut grows. And from that point, I think when it first came up about doing a film about it, I really thought, how could we incorporate this in our overall understanding of food and eating, which is so confusing to so many people. And if we could explain it in a way that makes scientific sense and that we could kind of use as a broad line to understand how we interact with food in general, I thought it would be a great idea. So in general, I think my background in science motivated my interest in making films and motivated my interest in the media, because when I was studying science, especially with respect to like climate change and a bunch of other environmental issues, it occurred to me that we know a lot about these things. We just forget or haven't communicated them in ways that people can understand or make sense of. So very early in my career, after multiple master's degrees in science, I decided to move into the media for that particular reason, is the communication is often more important than the actual facts, because so much about our communication is we're getting it wrong, whether it's intentional or unintentional.
So key to understanding the documentary is author and scientist Julia Enders. According to her, you know, the title of your film is simple, Hack Your Health. So I'm going to ask you, what would she say is the hack in hacking your health, you think?
So I'm not sure you're going to want to use this, but my original title suggestion for this was Shit Show. Because I feel like ultimately it's all about like what your body processes and what it puts out. I think the hack in essence is that it's not a hack. And the bottom line to this idea is that there are things that you can do in your life that are really easy, like making sure that you eat 30 different fruits or vegetables or spices or anything per week that are super achievable in your life every week that you can do to improve your health. And that's actually the easiest hack of all, is actually just diversify your diet. An example of this is if you have curry in anything that you do. I'm from an Indian background. Curry has like 10, 15 spices. That's 10 to 15 of your, say, minimum 30 a week just by one meal. You put in a few different vegetables into that, you're almost the way there. And the more that you do, the better. I used to have kale all the time. Maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe I need to go for lettuce next time, or dandelion greens, or chard, or whatever it is. But it's an easy replacement at the supermarket that you can do, just like swap one thing for another thing and just eat differently all the time to build out those microbes in your body. So the hack your health ultimately is about hacking your understanding of food. It's simplifying it. It's basing it in science, which is the more stuff and the more various stuff that you put in your body, the more various your microbiome will be in your gut. And that is going to be better for you in terms of resilience and health in the longer term.
So you keep using this word microbiome. It sounds like a little dome with like people living under it or something. So can you just tell me, like, in simple terms, what is the microbiome in our gut? How does it work? Is that like too big a question?
My understanding of the microbiome, I think of it as like the universe that lives inside you. And that is the universe that's on your skin. It's the universe that's in your mouth. It's the universe that's like in your eyes. You know, there are so many little beings that are everywhere on your body, and that constitutes your entire microbiome. Whether that's little viruses or bacteria or phages, like there's so many different things that are living inside it and on our bodies. And the gut microbiome is specifically the microbiome that is living in your gut. So it's all the bacteria and the viruses and other little things that might be inside of your body.
So to give real world examples of how the gut affects different people in sometimes significant ways, you feature four subjects who each present with their own gut issues. The first is Maya. She's an acclaimed pastry chef who's, as you say, afraid of her own food. She has a complicated relationship with eating. So what's happening with her and her gut?
To kind of step one step backwards, which is that I understand that everybody's relationship to food is different. And so when we were trying to think of this film, we were trying to get the variances that we all have in our relationships with food. So it was important to me to cast this in a way that would speak about all of these different aspects and not be really too specific about one experience. This wasn't just about losing weight or wasn't about issues with digestive health or taking too many antibiotics. We did try to cast it so we had a variety of people. And we didn't necessarily look at everything that we could have looked at. The relationship between the gut microbiome and cancer and cancer treatment is incredible. Like, it's so, so interesting about like recovery rates and everything while during chemo. So there's a whole breadth of things that you can be thinking about, and we chose four. So Maya's issue were a couple of things, I think, with respect to her gut. She had this curiousness about what is healthy that was leading towards an obsession with health.
So this is, yeah, like guarana, suma, reishi, lion's mane, cordyceps, the spirulina, chlorella, moringa. Basically, I eat a lot of vegetables and then supplement it with potions and powders and things that the internet tells me that I probably need.
She was staying away from certain foods and then having like issues, emotional and otherwise. She was terrified of sugar, and she had maybe even potentially continues to have a semi-unhealthy relationship with food that was hindering her ability to process foods emotionally and otherwise. Her issues were too, not understanding what's healthy or what she was going through, as well as this tendency to hold back and not eat a diversity of foods, focusing on just the things that were super, super healthy and getting kind of over-obsessive about it.
I thought it was so interesting that your film points out that sort of maximizing nutrition, that obsession with nutrition, she was taking all these potions and tonics, was its own kind of disordered eating. And that at the end, we see Maya microdosing potato chips. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that the reality is that 75% of women have a disordered relationship with food in general. And disordered eating can have so many different forms. If you think about the idea of biohacking or restrictive eating or any of these things, in essence, these are all disordered eating of some genre or other. And I thought that that needed to be discussed as part of this conversation about food and doing what feels good for our bodies and doing everything within reason. And I think that it is all too common a situation, whether it's like anorexia, bulimia, biohacking to extremes, fasting for multiple days, which is very common in certain kind of biohacking spheres, that could be healthy. It also can be difficult for your body, and everybody doing that isn't necessarily a good thing. So that was really important to me to kind of talk about that side of it, because I think, for example, myself, you know, whether it's the mushrooms or the blueberries, there's so many different things that you're supposed to do to be more healthy. And being disordered about how you eat can often be just as detrimental as anything else.
So Kimmy is a mom who's been trying to lose weight for a really long time, including trying those weight loss medications that work for many people. Her testing showed some low levels in her microbiome, in her gut microbiome. Are the researchers' beliefs that this is the cause of her inability to lose weight or the effect of her inability to lose weight? Is there an understanding there?
Yeah, I think that there's never a full understanding of what leads to what, but it's all related. So our microbiomes are partly what is passed on by our parents. So say our moms and the genetic microbiomes that they have, that's through their breast milk. It could be whether you're a cesarean baby or whether you were breastfed or what foods you've been eating in your environment. There are a million different things that can impact our microbiomes and the way that we process food. And whether that leads to one thing or because of a relationship of how she's metabolizing, it's affecting her microbiome.
Kind of amazed, actually. I mean, just to be able to find out all those different things about myself simply from testing poop. But I don't know. I guess it just seems so difficult. Why does it just seem like I'm stuck? Am I stuck?
Yeah. No, you're not stuck.
It's not 100% clear what is the cause and what is the result. It can't be like there's not a hard and fast rule about it, is what I'm trying to say. Mm. What we know about Kimmy and about this process is that she's an incredibly busy mom. She's got kids. She's a single mom. She's taking care of everything. She's not necessarily having enough time in her day to make sure that there are freshly cooked meals for her kids and that they're not prioritizing food or making it necessarily like a fun thing to do before this film to do together. And that increasing the types and varieties of real foods that they're consuming is going to help her on this journey. And having a better relationship with food in the long term will help her on this journey. So I think that that's what the film has discovered overall, is that, yes, she's low in all of these things, and eating better and making sure that she's less stressed and a whole bunch of other things are going to impact her microbiome in ways that she might be able to have a better relationship with food and her weight in the future.
When you were casting this, I can't imagine that one of the checkboxes when you first imagined this project was competitive eater. But that is where 6-time hot dog eating contest winner Kobe Kobayashi comes in. He's successful, I think, in his field because he never feels full, but he also never feels hungry. This is a really singular issue with food, right?
Oh, no, I think that this is very common.
I think
people's feeling of hunger or fullness is quite common, that we have a disconnection with our feelings of hunger or satiety. Now, the reasons for that might be different.
You can see how far your body goes for what you want, even if it has to harm itself.
He said, I'm already scared. He's like, I don't know if my brain is okay.
Yeah, but it's not that something is turned off or gone or broken. It's all there. It's all turned on. It's just wired differently, maybe.
Kobe has pushed his body to the limits. But a lot of people continue to eat even though they're technically full, right? People overeat. People undereat. So this disconnection with the shutting down of our hunger and satiety systems is a massive issue in regulation of weight and overall understanding. And that's why we thought it was so interesting to present his story, is getting that sense of what your body needs and what is good for your body, and paying attention to those signals is a cornerstone of like what we need to do better. You know, we're one of the animals in this entire universe that has most brain development and most society development and everything. And it's like the thing that we don't do, that squirrels do, that animals do, is they know what they need to survive and they know what they need to eat. And we have completely lost that sense. So I think that that's what's most interesting about his situation, is the way he got there might have been different. And the mechanism for why it's broken might be slightly different. But, you know, if you talk to any weight clinics, if you talk to any, like at all the biggest hospitals, this is this breakdown of hunger and fullness circles is one of the massive reasons for dysregulation of like body weight and things that lead to metabolic diseases.
Wow. I want to talk about making the film. Mm-hmm. There are some shots that are just so interesting and fun to watch. One of the scenes I'm thinking of is in which he, Kobe, is presented this giant tray of hot dogs. Now, I'm assuming that like he had to know in advance that this was going to happen. You can't just like surprise somebody with 20 hot dogs. What was that? What was shooting that scene like?
Yeah, you know, this was a film that wasn't like a verite film where things were already happening and we just got to follow along. This was a very much try to explain particular topics and also be fun and light and humorous. Kobe is a machine and he's so incredible. And we knew that that would be an incredibly interesting visual to show his mastery, but also to understand these different signals. So we were following people around, but it was a lot of like understanding what would contribute to the storylines and their progression of what they were doing. But it was a little bit like there were certain scenes that were pitched, you know, like, could we explain the gut and what it is by walking to this massive inflatable gut?
The intestinal tract, it's not a straight thing. It's a bit, you know, crooked here, crooked there. The stomach, for example, it goes like this. So on top of it, there's an air bubble. So when you really have a lot of air in your stomach and you want to get it out, lay on your left side. Because then the air bubble actually can go out quite nicely.
It was an inflatable gut that one of the characters in the film already had. They had used it, but you know, we did that to help our audience just like understand the entire process. The Kobe eating hot dogs, that was a conversation that we had. We wanted to show his mastery in a way that looked delightful and interesting. And we also didn't want to hurt his gut more. So there was a little bit of a, like, how can we do this scene in a way that's also not going to contribute to his problems? And so we had a little spit cup for him where he was eating and he was actually spitting. Now, of course, because Kobe is who he is and he's incredible, he was not always using the spit cup. So we did have to slow him down at certain points. But watching it live was one of the most incredible things that I've seen in my life. He's incredible. The way that he eats, the scientific breakdown of how to eat a hot dog the fastest possible. Like, he's a machine, not just because he's stuffing his face, but also because he's thought of it incredibly systematically. Like, it's an art at the end of the day. And we're so grateful for him for sharing that art with us.
So you use one technique I haven't seen before to animate the film, these sequences of stop action photography using felt and fiber. Where did this idea come from?
The idea for using stop motion animation in the film, and specifically like woolen stop motion animation, came from the idea of like, what would be the unlikely way to do a science film? A likely way to kind of express scientific concepts would be graphs and graphics and everything like that. And we thought, could we go the opposite, go as analog as possible, like create this incredible world within us in a way that is almost childlike, like Fraggle Rock or something like that. It partly came up through things that we were like visual aids and so on that we were using in our tone boards and mood boards. Both Morgan Neville, who's the executive producer on this project, had seen some ideas that were created around food. I also love the idea of like miniatures that is often in like presented in Japanese cultures of like little tiny food and the cuteness of it all. So it was all this idea of like, we think of the gut as something that's kind of gross. You know, it's like mashed up food. It includes your anus, you know, it includes like things that we're ashamed of, that we have a lot of guilt or shame or problems around. And we wanted to present it in a way that was fun and interesting and curious and childlike, because ultimately that's what's happening inside of our bodies. And if we could get it out of the frame of gross to the frame of curious and cute, we thought we could have a meaningful conversation about it.
Hmm. The fourth person you highlight is Danielle, a doctoral student who's living with chronic gut problems. At the risk of oversimplifying it, it's believed she doesn't have enough of the good kind of microbiomes in her gut. So she's been trying fecal microbiota transplantation at home, which, by the way, your experts do not recommend. We'll get to that in a second. But what is the science and theory behind that transplantation?
Yeah, the idea behind that is that the differences and the variance in your gut, in your microbiome, helps you deal with the things that come up. So say if you have a particular type of food, your microbiome helps you digest that particular food. If you have a particular immune issue and you have a resilient microbiome, it might handle it in a slightly different way. But your gut microbiome, they affect your mood, your brain, your digestion, your responses. So that means like the flushing of your skin or psoriasis or like all of these types of skin issues. They affect brain diseases. They affect like so many different parts of our being. And if you can diversify and create a better microbiome, then you can overcome some of those particular challenges. So that's the idea behind it.
We take the bacterial community from a healthy person, just spraying it up inside the colon, literally, in order to repopulate your gut bacteria inside there.
It's a procedure that has a 90% cure rate.
Why you would take particular pills is that we know that most things that live in the world, they don't necessarily live in your gut. It's a very specific thing. And your microbes, including live and dead microbes, get excreted as part of the flushing through your body. Fecal matter has microbes in it. And that's the starting point of this conversation about how could you create a new microbiome in your own gut. The way that they do it, you know, the pouches that they're putting it in, the freezing, all of those types of things are so that it's not ending up anywhere else in your system, rather just in your gut, and that there's a chance that it can live. It is FDA approved for certain chronic gut issues. You know, there's hundreds of trials ongoing right now for different maladies and skin situations. It could be depression, anxiety, all of these types of issues. They've been trying fecal transplants. I should also mention that like just eating better food or eating fermented foods and eating a more varied diet also is in trial in a lot of these things and has a lot of success. So you don't need to go to a fecal microbiome transplant as a first course of action. Try changing your diet. Try incorporating some kraut or try some kimchi. You know, make it at home. You don't need to try a kefir in your own home. All these fermented foods and the variety of diet of real foods that you're putting in your body are going to make your brain, your mood, your digestion, like everything better. I can attest to that. And most people that have been a part of the film and have changed their own lives can attest to that as well. You know, you're a sample size of one ultimately. And so all the science in the world can be there, but you should listen to your body in terms of what is best. And of course, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So Danielle's, you know, self-treatment, she's basically doing it in her own kitchen. And until then in the film, you've been so restrained with, you know, these cartoons, these felt cutouts. We have the scenes of people testing themselves. And even those scenes are like very restrained and arty. But you really kind of go for the full Monty in this particular scene. And I'm wondering what has been the reaction of viewers when we see that freezer opening, her boyfriend opening that freezer. My reaction was, wow. Has that been the sort of general reaction that people get watching that part of the film?
Absolutely. I think it's the part that's most beloved and also the part that's most hated. So, and it was a question about like what was appropriate and what was not.
Here it is, next to the food we're going to eat later.
Is it in the healthy range?
This is a good one.
There's so many different reactions about this stuff. And I think for us, it was just important to have the conversation and be clear about the restrictions that you should have, but also make sure that it's people are aware of it. It's like any other controversial topic, whether it's artificial intelligence or otherwise, like not having the conversation is not helpful to anybody.
Right.
So it's better to bring it up and bring up the positives and negatives so that people aren't doing this in their own home unguided.
Yeah. I can't be the only one who's wondering this. Is this a single use blender that they have at their house?
I actually don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that we accidentally used X-tuned lenses instead of T-tuned lenses of the Blackwings for this. And so we had all these magical flares that were unanticipated and happening everywhere whenever we shot in the direction of a window. And as the blender was going, there's this beautiful rainbow flare. And I was like, that's the shot. I was like, we're definitely using that shot. It was so glorious and beautiful. Meanwhile, like the person that was doing the focus, the AC was focusing the shot and was retching in the back room. For me, it was like, this is life. Danielle was so gracious to us to share that part of her life with us. I know she's had so many issues, and bringing it to the attention and of everybody, the journey that she's been through, I was just really grateful. And I think it was important for us to like have the conversation, because a lot of people are doing this in their own homes. A lot of people are doing this in unsafe ways, and having the conversation brings it closer to people being safe about it.
Hmm. So you mentioned that right now fecal transplantation is approved for treating C. diff is actually the thing I think it's approved for now, right? And it's in trials for lots of other things. Danielle tells an anecdote about, you know, using fecal matter from her brother and getting acne that her brother had, and then using her boyfriend's and then getting his depression. And you mentioned that it's actually in trials to treat those things. I'm curious. There is an analysis that shows certain biomicrome communities for people with, you know, these conditions. And a more critical query might be whether it's the community that's contributing to that condition or whether the unhealthy microbiome community results from that condition, you know, whether it's obesity or depression or acne. So the critical question might be whether you're treating the cause of the problem or the symptom of the problem. So is there any kind of consensus from mainstream science on this, or is that still a question?
Yeah, I would definitely turn to the scientists in their most recent research for this. But I would say that in general, like the chicken or the egg approach has been one of the things that's been most challenging for people. You'd need to do like a lot of trials and controlled trials to see the impacts of those. That I don't know if there's like one specific hard and fast rule about this, but we do know that they're related and that they can be remedied in some cases with changes. So for example, there's been a lot of trials about like taking students and stress levels and changing diet. And then you see the outcomes of less stress and less moods and less all of these types of things. Same thing with various brain related things, whether they're autisms or other things, the change of food leads to better outcomes. When you look at cancer research, if you pair, say for melanomas, if you're pairing chemo with a certain particular diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables and lots of high fiber, then the outcomes are better. So regardless of what has created the situation, what is clear in the research is that outcomes can be moderated or changed with changes in diet and changes in other things like introductions of fermented foods, for example. So the Sonnenbergs have done a lot of work in that. Same with John Cryan, and who's featured in the film, have done a lot of research in that domain as well.
So I'm curious, how are your four subjects doing today?
They're legends in general. Like it was... So I'll start back. When we started this film, it was clear that all of the people in our film had achieved greatness by the age of 23. I think that's when Maya got her Michelin star and like Kobe had like won his championship by that time. And it was like, we were in the company of greatness. They are all incredible human beings. They're going through their journeys. I'm excited to be in this process with them and check in on them and see also like, and try to help moderate. I know that being on television in so many different countries around the world is a bit of a trip. So I think that there will be a lot of check-ins over the next several months to make sure that their privacy and that their status and that their own personal journey doesn't feel too exposed. But I am grateful for them for sharing such a vulnerable part of themselves and being curious and interested in this process. And I will be in touch with them forever.
So after watching your doc, I did my own research. I found so many renowned medical institutions are investing heavily in and publishing lots of research on the gut-brain-body connection, Johns Hopkins, UCLA, Harvard, Oxford. Do you have any sense of whether or how soon we may all be talking to our GPs about our gut microbes during our regular annual checkups?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think that the modern medicine often takes an approach of treatment of maladies rather than preventative medicine. It's the way that we often do things. It's a kind of curative approach rather than preventative approach. What I would like to see as an overall push is more conversation about these things so that we're not getting sick rather than the treatment of the symptoms when we do get sick. And I think the microbiome and all biomes, and this could include like viruses in the future and other things like that. This includes less stress and thinking about stress moderation and all of these things that we know lead to trouble later on in life. I would like to see a shift in medicine and the way that we approach it and like bringing up some of these issues bright and early, like when we don't have diabetes, when we don't have obesity issues, so that they become holistically like part of medicine. I don't know if that's going to be possible within the structures that exist right now, but certainly it's what I would hope for. So it's not necessarily like maybe we all do need to bring this up to our GPs so it becomes more aware and we know that this is an expectation. But I do think that it is a shift in how we think about the role of medicine and the role of healthcare in our society is like thinking more about the person as a whole, how these systems are interconnected, how we can ensure that we're treating and thinking about whole body health, so that if we have depression, we're not just like taking a pill for the depression. We're also thinking about what we're eating and like what we're putting in our body and whether we're getting enough sleep, all these other things that affect the brain as well. So that's what I think would be really helpful moving forward.
Well, the documentary is Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut. Anjali Nair, I can't stop thinking about it ever since I watched it, and I definitely am thinking more about what I eat. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast to talk to me about it. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to speak with you guys.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks again to director Anjali Nair. For more of my takes, check out my other podcast, Crime Writers On. Each week on that show, we break down the latest in true crime documentaries, TV shows, podcasts, and pop culture. If you like You Can't Make This Up, please rate and review this show and share it with your friends. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. And make sure to follow the show to stay tuned for all new episodes. You Can't Make This Up is a production of Netflix. I'm Rebecca Lavoie. Thanks so much for listening.